transmitting live from the heart of Times Square on 99.5 FM, WBAI New York, Pacifica Radio for the Tri-State Area. This is Trump Watch, a weekly series investigating the actions of and reactions to President Donald J. Trump and his administration. I'm your host, Jesse Lent.
I have no doubt in my mind at all that someday my kids, all of our kids, will look back and say, what on God's green earth were all of you thinking? What were you possibly thinking as a nation to treat children this way? There is no doubt in my mind.
That was Bob Ferguson, Attorney General for Washington State, at a press conference on Monday, announcing that 19 states, along with the District of Columbia, were filing a lawsuit in an attempt to block a new Trump administration policy that would allow immigration enforcement officials to detain migrant families indefinitely. Footage courtesy of the Associated Press. Hello and welcome to Trump Watch. Will the states be able to block this aspect of immigration policy? Clearly the issue President Trump wants to make his 2020 re-election campaign about more than any other. That's what we're going to discuss tonight. And what would these longer detentions mean for our already overtaxed and highly controversial immigration detention system? Here to help answer those questions is Micah Rosenberg of Reuters. We spoke just before this broadcast. Joining me now is Micah Rosenberg, an immigration reporter for Reuters and author of the August 26th article, 19 States, District of Columbia, Sue Trump Administration Over Migrant Detention. Hello, Micah. Welcome to Trump Watch. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Trump administration is attempting to change the so-called Flores Settlement Agreement. Can you explain what Flores is and what the administration wants to change about it?
Yeah, sure. So the Flores Settlement is actually a two-decade-old legal settlement that was put in place to resolve a case that was actually brought in the 1980s by migrants who were being held in detention and were challenging the conditions of their detention. And basically, there was a long legal battle about how these kids were being held. And finally, the government and the plaintiffs and the lawyers for the plaintiffs of the kids basically came to an agreement of this very extensive set of standards that were put in place on how long children could be held, what kind of conditions that they had to be held in. And that basically has governed migrant detention for children and has been revised over the years. And so in 2015, there was a going back to court when the Obama administration was detaining families. And the lawyers in the case said that the settlement shouldn't just apply for kids who have crossed the border alone, but also kids who have crossed the border with their families. And so it put similar limits on detention and similar detention standards for kids crossing with families and not just alone. So that is what the Trump administration is trying to change. They said that that they want to be able to detain families, and to do that, they need to get rid of this settlement altogether.
The Flores Agreement, at least initially, grew out of a Supreme Court ruling, the 1993 case of Reno v. Flores. If a Supreme Court decision is the law of the land, is it unusual for a president to flout it in this fashion, or has it gotten so far removed from the Supreme Court ruling at this point that it's not really an issue?
Well, under the terms of the settlement, basically they said that if there was congressional action or a government rule that was put in place to replace it, then the settlement would go away. So this is what the government is trying to do. They're saying that their new rules that they've proposed should totally replace the settlement and should be the new regulations. Now, what's going to happen is that both the states who have said that they're going to sue over this and the original people in the original lawsuit are going to go back to court and say that these rules actually don't live up to the standards of the settlement and shouldn't be implemented.
In response to the president's announcement on Friday that he would remove any limits to how long migrant families can be detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, attorneys general for 19 states and the District of Columbia sued the administration. What are the specific legal grounds the states are challenging the administration on regarding the way that migrant children are detained?
So they're going to be making several legal arguments. One of them is that they say that how the government implemented these rules actually didn't follow, you know, correct procedure, even though the government proposed them and sort of opened them up to notice and comment and received over 100,000 comments on these new rules. They're saying that they sort of violate the process and were not promulgated in the correct way. The other thing that they're arguing is that it violates the due process of the migrants. It will holding them indefinitely could violate their chances at seeking asylum properly, and that also they're going to make arguments that it violates the immigration laws of the land. So they're trying to hit it with as many different legal arguments as possible.
Are there any additional states or organizations expected to join the lawsuit?
Other migrant organizations have said that they're considering suing. So there could be either separate lawsuits or they could file related lawsuits. And then also remember that since this is basically stemming from an ongoing lawsuit, those original lawyers are going to go back to court and try and get the judge who oversees the settlement and has overseen the settlement for 20 years to say that these rules are not valid and violate the parameters that she's already set up in court.
What's the justification the Trump administration has given for removing limits on how long migrant families are detained for?
Well, the Trump administration has said over and over again that they're facing an unprecedented crisis at the southwest border. There really has been a surge in the number of migrants, mostly from Central America, who have been arriving in families. And they say that the reason that's happening is because this limit on how long families can be detained has become sort of a pull factor for migrants from Central America. They say that, human smugglers down in mostly in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, where most of these migrants come from, say, hey, if you bring a child with you, you come to the United States. Since this legal settlement says you can only be held for 20 days, you'll be released into the United States. And then while you pursue your court case, you can live, for months or years while you're waiting for a decision from the court. Basically, what they say is that sort of spurring this migration. On the other hand, immigration advocates say, these families are fleeing sort of desperate situations of violence and poverty in Central America, and that, detaining families for longer won't necessarily be a deterrent, and that you shouldn't really create policies it could be illegal to create policies that are primarily meant to deter migration.
Is there data to support the administration's assertion that this idea of migrant families not being separated is being used by people who want to come to the country illegally?
Well, there's not exactly data that proves that point. There's definitely data that shows that there has been a surge in Central American families. That's irrefutable. And there has been a lot of anecdotal evidence and reporting about migrants who have spoken to reporters like me and others who have said that they have been told that bringing a child is a way to get into the United States. But there's also a lot of migrants who say that they didn't even think about that and were, fleeing a death threat or a kidnapping attempt. And so there's just so many different stories and so many different reasons for why people leave that it's hard to put a number on the justification, that particular argument that the Trump administration is using as a justification.
Is it possible to predict what the outcome of this legal challenge will be? Are we looking at a Supreme Court challenge here?
Well, most of these cases, you know, this is not the first time that the government has proposed a sort of sweeping change to U.S. immigration policy. All of those have been fought in court. Many of them have been blocked at the federal court level. There's been sort of mixed success at the appeals court level, but all of them have been appealed by both sides to the Supreme Court. So this is a very significant change in U.S. immigration policy, and it most likely will ultimately end up in the Supreme Court.
Will these policy changes on the way migrants are detained go into effect while the legal challenges make their way through the courts?
Well, that'll depend somewhat. Right now, the rule is supposed to go into effect 60 days after its publication, which would be in October. But the states and others who sue can ask for what is called a temporary restraining order, which is an emergency halt on the rules while the legal challenge is going forward. Many of the courts in other immigration rule changes have issued those restraining orders, and so a lot of the rules that the Trump administration has tried to put in place have been halted as these cases sort of, you know, move very slowly through the court system. But not all of them have. So it is something that the court will have to decide whether or not it can go into effect while they're fighting it out.
I'm speaking with Micah Rosenberg, an immigration reporter for Reuters. You're listening to Trump Watch. My name is Jesse Lent. Micah, you report that even if this new policy goes into effect, the U.S. currently doesn't have the facilities to enforce it. Why is that?
Well, right now, the U.S. immigration authorities under ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, detain immigrants for longer periods of time. And they have a limited number of detention beds that's mandated by how much money they get from Congress. And because there was this settlement with limits on family detention, they really hadn't built up the capacity to hold families. During the Obama administration, Obama administration also faced a surge in minors and families coming over, and they tried to detain families together. And so they built several detention centers that were specifically for families. But then, you know, the lawyers in this particular settlement went back and put a stop to that. So since then, that capacity hasn't really been expanded. The acting secretary of Homeland Security said there's about 2,500 to 3,000 beds for families, and that compares to the 55,000 migrants overall, including families that are being held now on average every day. So converting either existing facilities or building new ones can be very costly, especially because the detention spaces that need to house families require a lot of other more expensive facilities and are supposed to be a little bit more accommodating than some of the facilities for adults.
So in light of those limitations you just described, what would enforcement of the policy look like? Is it possible to repurpose pre-existing facilities to house families?
Well, the Department of Homeland Security does have some discretion with their existing budget to try and reprogram from other parts of the agency to detention. And they actually this week notified Congress. Well, they notified Congress in July, but it became public this week that they were seeking to reprogram about $116 million from other parts of the agency, including TSA and from FEMA for disaster relief to have new detention facilities and also for new hearing facilities. So that with that reprogramming request, they are all able to do some changes to detention, but it's unclear if they're going to be able to have enough money to really expand rapidly and hold the tens of thousands of families who are crossing each month.
Back in June, a Justice Department lawyer received death threats and was doxxed after attempting to, as Manny Fernandez of the New York Times described it, quote, parse the meaning of safe and sanitary conditions, the standard established by a settlement agreement, of course, Flores, that determines the government's handling of migrant children who are being held in detention, unquote. Do you believe that the official administration position on the conditions of detention centers and the facilities provided for children are in line with what that Justice Department lawyer was arguing?
Well, there's a slight difference between what that Justice Department lawyer was talking about and with the facilities that the administration is talking about now in terms of housing families. At issue in that particular incident is Border Patrol facilities where, thousands of migrants, families and children included, were being held temporarily for long past the time that was allowed under the settlement and what they had the capacity for. A lot of these border facilities were basically just way stations or sort of, you know, police holding cells and were really not equipped at all to hold anybody for long periods of time, much less children and families. But because they were the government was so strained in terms of their capacity for long-term detention, kids and families were being held in those facilities for long periods of time and weren't transferred to the custody of ICE, who are the ones who have the facilities that are meant for long-term detention. So that's where you heard stories of really terrible situations of, kids with nobody looking after them, with dirty diapers and dirty clothes and not enough food and some of the really terrible things that the lawyers in this actual Flores settlement saw. So they went back to court to say that the border facility conditions violated the settlement. And the government has said that they are doing everything they can to make, to improve that situation. But what they say is what they need is really long-term facilities. And that's why they want to be able to transfer families to other places that they say would be more appropriate.
But if this change goes into effect on Flores and migrant families can be held as long as the administration thinks they should be, wouldn't that make the situation you were just describing worse, particularly if the infrastructure there, the facilities ICE has access to detain people in, are already as strained as you've been describing?
Well, they say it would make it better because there's sort of two systems here. There's one is the Border Patrol facilities, which are not meant to house anybody, which have been overwhelmed and are holding migrants for much longer. And they need to be transferred to long-term ICE detention. So what the government is saying is that if they have the ability to hold people for longer, they'll be able to transfer them to facilities that are more appropriate. Now, of course, the immigrant advocates say that even those long-term facilities, while they may be better than the sort of temporary border facilities, they still have serious problems. They're jails, whether or not they have, furniture and recreation areas, it's not an appropriate place to keep a child or family for any long period of time. So they say that, while it may be slightly better than the situation now, if they're transferred to a different facility, it still could have egregious problems. And they're going to argue in court that that would violate the terms of the settlement and the rule should not be allowed to go into place.
What do you think the fact that so many people went after one Justice Department lawyer personally tells us about the nature of the debate over immigration in America happening right now?
Well, I think obviously it's extremely polarized, and I feel like a lot of the details of the situation can be glossed over, not just because of the polarization, but because it's a very complicated system. Just like in that case, she was talking about Border Patrol facilities, which are different than ICE facilities, which are different than shelters for unaccompanied minors, which are housed under a completely different government agency. So a lot of the kind of brushing over of those details has created a situation where, people get outraged, often rightly, but sometimes about the wrong things.
And as we always like to point out in immigration discussions like these, the Obama administration did deport a historic amount of Americans, or should I say people living in America. They would dispute whether they were Americans.
Yes, the Obama administration actually has deported, in the first term of Obama administration, deported more than the Trump administration has been able to. But in the second half of his administration, they changed the priorities to sort of focus mostly on the most dangerous criminals, and those numbers went down. But as Trump often likes to point out, the Obama administration was the first to try and detain families to, in some ways, contain this increase in family migration, but that was put a stop to because of this exact court settlement.
And not to linger on that for too long, but I think it's a point that often gets confused because Trump supporters often say, well, Obama put families in cages. He put kids in cages first. How is what the Trump administration is doing different than what the Trump administration did specifically in relating to children and the way they're detained?
Mm-hmm. So the Obama administration did detain families for a brief period of time. They did build family detention centers, and that is precisely why the immigration attorneys in this Flores case went back to court and said that those family detention centers were violating the standards that children should be detained in, and the agreement was expanded to apply to families, and that 20-day limit on how long children and families can be held was put into place. What the Trump administration, or what specifically President Trump has said very often, which is completely incorrect, is that Obama separated parents and children on a mass scale. The Trump administration is the first to do that when they did that last year. And in some ways, now the administration is using this family detention rule as a way to say, well, it's better than separation.
The federal appeals court panel in the case we were discussing a minute ago ruled earlier this month that the government must provide detained migrant children with basic hygiene supplies such as toothbrushes and sleeping mats. But does that appeals court have any way of enforcing that ruling?
Well, that ruling was specifically in response to the concerns that had been raised about those Border Patrol facilities. And since the Flores settlement is still in place before these rules overturn it, the government has to follow that ruling by the Ninth Circuit. Now, this is brings us back to the whole reason why the Trump administration has brought these new rules and published them, is that they want to replace the entire settlement with the new standards. They say that the new standards are very high. They say that the facilities that they would house families in would have proper medical care, would have education facilities and places for people to sleep and eat safely. But we have seen in the past, and specifically when the Obama administration had these facilities, there were a lot of problems, and a lot of standards didn't live up to what the government had promised.
Getting back to this specific policy on Flores that we started with in our last minute here, what do you see the likely effect being of the government being able to detain immigrant families indefinitely? Will it have the chilling effect on families crossing the border in hopes of gaining U.S. citizenship, as the Trump administration has been saying they're hoping to achieve?
It's really hard to say, but I think what we have seen in the past with a lot of different policies that different administrations have put into effect, that it's difficult to stop migration. People now in Central America and other places around the world are fleeing really dire situations at home, be that political violence or general insecurity or just economic opportunities. And
A lot of people, regardless of how sort of terrible the situation they may face in the United States, will not be deterred. Potentially there will be some, but there has often been a lot of sort of cyclical migration that has happened where you see sort of short-term responses to policy changes or political changes. Like after Trump was elected, there was a huge drop in the number of border crossings, but then they climbed right back up and reached record highs. So it really goes up and down, and it's really hard to say how much people are making calculations based on what the United States is doing or based on their own sort of terrible situations at home.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Micah Rosenberg, an immigration reporter for Reuters and author of the August 26th article, 19 States, District of Columbia, Sue Trump Administration Over Migrant Detention. You're listening to Trump Watch. My name is Jesse Lent. And that's all for this week. Reggie Johnson engineered this program live. You can hear all 126 episodes of Trump Watch with Jesse Lent at soundcloud.com/TrumpWatchWBAI or wherever you get your podcasts. Join us again next week when we'll break down a different aspect of the Donald Trump administration. Until then, I'm your host, Jesse Lent. Talk to you next time.